Before I get started this morning, I just want to thank you all for what an encouragement you have been to me this weekend. As you have, so many of you have come up to me and said, I was praying for you before the retreat, I've been praying for you through the retreat, and I want you to know that your prayers have really been felt by me, and I just thank you for all the encouraging words that you've given to me. And I don't know how many of the Lansdale ladies are still here, but you know, I got this wonderful surprise. I walked into my room. You know, being the president of Preswick, I make sure that all the assignments are covered, right? I did not assign anybody to give a gift basket to the speaker. But I walked into my room. There's this wonderful basket there full of all these wonderful chocolates and other nifty things. So thank you so much for that. And I want to thank Covenant for those wonderful, putting together those booklets so that all the notes are there together and they don't get lost and strayed and out of order. So thank you to Covenant. And you musicians, wow, that music has really been, the words have really just dovetailed so much with what I'm saying this weekend and what I want you to go away with. And music helps us to remember those things. It has a special connection with us that just hearing somebody talk doesn't have. You know, you don't forget things that you've sung the way you forget things that you've heard. So thank you for, again, Covenant, for that wonderful music. And, you know, I had this other surprise. Last night and this morning, there were notes pushed under my door, and my daughter was talking to her husband on the phone last night, and she said, my mom's getting fan mail. So those notes were very encouraging. Thank you for that. You know, it's not just me who thinks you're the greatest women in the world. I was talking with a banquet manager here at the hotel this morning, and he said to me, our servers have loved serving this group. He said, you are the best group they've ever had. And he said, you know, they're very discriminating. They don't dislike everybody. And I know that because my other daughter has worked as a waitress, and she comes home, she would come home and tell me stories about these awful people who were at her table and how the things that she had to deal with and how they're so demanding and nothing is ever right. So I know that those servers know, you know, and they have seen in you the Spirit of Jesus. Amen. We have been a witness to them by how we have conducted ourselves this weekend. And I just want to tell you what wonderful, wonderful women you are and what a joy it has been to be here this weekend with you and to be your speaker. So now we have come to our last session, and I believe this is the one you've all been dreading, right? I've heard people going, groan, we're going to talk about the woman of Proverbs 31. Well, we are going to compare ourselves to her, but first in what she is not, and second in what she is, and then we're going to look at ways that we can find and use our gifts and graces in the places where God has put us. So you're going to want your Bibles open to Proverbs 31 this morning. Now, from the groans and the laughter that I've heard, I think you probably fit into what I think most women feel when they come to this woman, this excellent woman in Proverbs 31. She's not an encouragement, is she? She's a discouragement. We read her list of accomplishments and we just feel overwhelmed. We feel like we're lazy, we're inadequate, and I think we even feel guilty, don't we? That our lives do not measure up to her. You know, I think we think of her as this nonstop woman, and like this woman I read about in a newspaper article a number of years ago. Bonnie was a wife and a mother and a full-time industrial plant designer. She was vice chairman of her township zoning hearing board, vice president of the township concerned citizens, a Cub Scout leader, a youth soccer coach, And the reporter pointed out in the article, she and her husband were building an addition to the house and they were doing the work themselves. She got up at 4:30 every morning. She was at work by 6 a.m. so that she could have the afternoons to do fun things with her son, like go sleigh riding, like she was doing the day the reporter interviewed her. And in her free time, she played golf and volleyball. The reporter described her as sounding slightly out of breath. Well, yeah. So my reaction when I read this article was, well, I guess some people just don't need to sleep. And you know, in fact, I found out this is scientifically true. CNN Health webpage back in March reported that there are actually people who have a gene mutation that makes them natural short sleepers. Natural short sleepers. Me either, no. They wake after 4 hours of sleep feeling rested, they are not tired during the day, and they are very, very active. So maybe Bonnie is one of those natural short sleepers, but as you said, I am not one of those. And you know, the woman of Proverbs 31 is not just for those natural short sleepers. She's for us too. She's meant to encourage us. So before we read Proverbs 31, I want to dispel any ideas you have that you have to be Superwoman. First, the woman of Proverbs 31 is probably not any actual one woman who lived in Solomon's day, but she's a composite of several women. In other words, she's an ideal woman. She shows us the possibilities of what we can do. And a clue that she is an idealized woman is the fact that Proverbs 31 is an acrostic poem. That means that the first letter of each verse starts in the order of the Hebrew alphabet. So the first verse would start with Aleph, the second verse would start with Beit, and it would keep going through to the end of the alphabet. And that's why it has the number of verses that it has. So the woman of Proverbs 31 is a literary device called personification. Just like we read about the women, wisdom and folly throughout Proverbs, this is another woman who is a personification. As James Draper says, the woman of Proverbs 31 is the personification of all the virtues and strengths of character urged upon us throughout Proverbs. She is a model for all of us, whether men, women, or children. Carol Myers, who's a professor of Old Testament at Duke University, says that we should think of her as a senior woman, looking back on a lifetime of work. So Proverbs 31 is not a snapshot of a day in the life of the ideal woman, but a timeline. So when we compare ourselves to Proverbs 31, we need to have a lifetime perspective. We will have different roles at different times in our lives as we serve God through different seasons of life. So we might start out as a young single woman. Then we have young children. Our children grow up into active teenagers who need to be driven everywhere. And then there comes a point where our children are out of nest. Sometimes we get to a point where we are caring for an elderly parent. We become grandmothers and widows. And eventually we reach our final years. But you know what? We don't retire from God's kingdom workforce. When I was in seminary, John and I house sat for a couple who were short-term missionaries in Japan. This was how I got through seminary, was living in free housing. And we were looking after the wife's sister. And B had retired, and then she lost her eyesight from a virus. She needed a walker to get around the house. And she couldn't do a lot while we were living there with her, but she still made her contribution. She would cut out stamps to be resold for missionaries. She prayed, and she did the dishes every night, propped up with her walker there by the sink. You know, what Bea was able to do when we lived with her was not her entire work history. Anyone who saw just what she could do when she was in her 80s would have missed all that she had done in her life before that. She was a single woman who worked more than 40 years for Bell Telephone. She'd been active in her church and with her extended family, and she probably did a whole lot of other things that I never heard her talk about. And so it is with us. When we look back over 60 or 70 or 80 or 90 or 100 years, We too will have a long resume like this woman of Proverbs 31. You know, she didn't do it all in one day or even in one year. And you know what else? She didn't do it alone because she had servants. We don't have to do all of this kingdom work all alone. We have family, we have friends, we have the whole church, universal. We saw last night that building the kingdom is not a one-man job. It's not a one-woman job either, because we share this work with others. Sometimes we think we have to do it all, don't we? But it's a shared job. So now, I hope you're ready to meet this wonderful woman in Proverbs 31. Let's read. An excellent wife who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it, and with the fruit of her hands she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. Notice where the woman of Proverbs 31 uses her gifts and graces. She uses them in her home, in her family, and in her community. This is her sphere of influence. This is the part of the world God placed her in, the part of the world that he's put under her feet, to go back to the language of Psalm 8. She goes about her everyday task of buying and selling and cooking and clothing her family, furnishing her home, teaching her children, overseeing her employees, competing in the business world, investing her profits, and helping the poor and the needy in her neighborhood. So we see that though the world has changed since Proverbs 31 was written, she really is not so different from us. She used a spindle and a distaff, and she got her food off of sailing ships while we go to the supermarkets and the shopping mall, right? But we could, in fact, come up with modern-day equivalents to the things that she does. For example, she's the family shopper. She's a gourmet caterer. She's a vintner. She's a real estate investor, a workplace supervisor. How about a fitness trainer or an athlete, right? She makes her arms strong, verse 17 says. She owns a manufacturing business. She's an entrepreneur, a businesswoman, an employer. She's an artist, an interior decorator, a clothing designer, a seamstress, a boutique owner. She's a social worker, a teacher, an advisor. She's the keeper of the family events calendar because she looks well to the ways of her household. She's a wife and mother and a public figure. And don't forget, she helps her famous husband, who might be a city official or a judge. Are you starting to feel overwhelmed again? Are you starting to feel that not only is she Superwoman, but this is the super family? They could be on the Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous or the Real Housewives series. She would be a better subject for the Real Housewives than whatever Real Housewives are on right now. And it's not because what she does would make more exciting reality TV, but because of the kind of woman that she is. While Proverbs describes her mostly by what she does, it's her character that makes her the fitting role model for us real women. She is the Eshet Kael. I can never pronounce that sound right, but that's how it's supposed to be pronounced. She is the woman or wife of excellence. You know, Ruth was called an Eshet Kael. Boaz and David's mighty men are Ish Kael. That's just the masculine phrase. Ish is a man, Eshet is a woman. So Kael could be translated valor, strength, might, even military might, virtue, integrity, wealth, and riches. But excellence is really a good translation because the woman of Proverbs 31 truly does embody the virtues of excellence in Proverbs. I've given you just a few references here because there are just so many that you could go on for pages. Comparing her to the virtues that we see in Proverbs. Like wisdom, capital W, which stands for Christ, she is of high value. She repays those around her with good. In fact, Proverbs 3:13 through 18 sounds remarkably like the description that we get in Proverbs 31. Blessed is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For gain from her is better than gain from silver, and her profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life are in her right hand, and in her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her, and those who hold her fast are called blessed. And just as wisdom in Proverbs 14:1 builds a house, the woman of Proverbs 31 builds up her household and her community. She is wise and she speaks with wisdom. She's knowledgeable about everyday life and about God's law. She considers before she acts. She has a long-term perspective. You know, planting a vineyard is not a one-year crop. It takes several years to get wine from a vineyard. She's patient. She knows what's important. She knows that charm is deceitful and beauty is vain. She is skilled and excels in what she does, but she is not boastful. She is trustworthy. She's not anxious. She's hopeful and confident in God, and she laughs at the time to come. She is prepared and vigilant. She's not lazy. She's a cheerful and eager worker. She is strong and productive. She adds value to the things around her. She is charitable, generous, and kind. She is respected and respectful of others, and she fears the Lord. Now, this list reminds us that in order to fulfill our role in the kingdom, we have to be a certain kind of people. We have to be those women who cultivate the fruit of the Spirit and who delight in the Lord and meditate on His law. At leadership training in Atlanta, another WIC trainer, Melanie Codgill, shared a personal story about when she was making pancakes for her husband one morning, and she was grouchy and frustrated and resentful, and she was letting it show. We know what that's like, right? And her husband said to her, "I don't want to eat those pancakes of bitterness that you're making." Melanie didn't have that response. Yeah, she's a WIC trainer, you know. She said it made her realize that, first of all, she had to ask her husband's forgiveness for her attitude, but also that, as she put it, "I have to flip these pancakes to the glory of God." The woman of Proverbs 31 challenges us to do our everyday work with the right attitude, with cheerfulness and eagerness and a desire to glorify God. You see, we could go out and do all the modern equivalents of the jobs that are described in Proverbs 31, but if we don't cultivate her attitude and her character, we could be only serving pancakes of bitterness to our family and to our community. Instead of building up, We could, like the foolish woman in Proverbs 14:1, be tearing down with our own hands. Now, are you feeling more overwhelmed? More inadequate? It's easier to imitate her activities than to exhibit her character. But be encouraged, because God is gracious to use us in spite of our sin. When I was working at the bank, there were many days when I was not a cheerful worker. There were many days when I let my anger and my resentment and contempt for my job show, when I did not wait on customers to the glory of God. Yet God still used me, even in the lives of my coworkers who saw me day to day. I want to share with you a story, I hope I can do it without crying, about one coworker. Mary was a lapsed Catholic, but we became friends and we continued our friendship after I left the bank. As the months passed, Mary would call me and she would say, "I'm so worried about my parents." And one day she called to say that her father had gone to her mother's workplace with a shotgun. He had shot and killed her and then killed himself. God gave my husband and me the privilege of walking with Mary and her family through that time. Mary became a Christian. Others in her extended family became Christians, not just through us, but through others who came alongside them. And over the years, as our children were young, I had opportunities to disciple Mary. Now, I don't tell you this story to say, "I'm so wonderful," because I'm not, but to show you how wonderful God is, because I did not deserve to be given that ministry in Mary's life. But God is so merciful and gracious. He can turn our pancakes of bitterness into the bread of life. Remember that God is in the business of transforming us into the image of Christ so that we will be his kingdom helpers. He's in the business of taking our inadequacy and showing off his surpassing power. We serve a great God. And he who has given us gifts and graces will graciously use them. So let's turn to finding out how we find and use our gifts and graces. How do you know what your own gifts and graces are and where to use them? Have you ever taken those aptitude tests that tell you what you're supposed to do? Did that work out for you? Didn't work out for me. Or how about those seminars on finding your spiritual gifts? You know, they give you that list of 7 or 10 things and you're supposed to fit your life into those. Yeah, that didn't work for me either. It has been my experience that when asked what their spiritual gifts are, 9 out of 10 women will say, "I don't know." Now, some of that, I think, is that we don't want to appear to boast. So secretly, we kind of think we know, but we don't want to say so. Or because we didn't find our particular abilities in that list of 7 or 10 things, we go, "Well, I guess I don't have any spiritual gifts because none of these fit me." And so we don't think that they are gifts, but every ability that we have is a gift from God. Sometimes, though, we just don't know ourselves very well. So here's some ways to find out your gifts and graces. First of all, we can ask others. I have a friend who filled out an eHarmony profile, but she kept getting paired with these men that just weren't right for her. So finally, her friend said, "Nancy, let me see what you put on there." And they said, "Nancy, that's not you. Here, we're going to fill out your eHarmony profile for you." And do you know what? The first man she met is the man she married. So sometimes other people help us discover our gifts and graces because they can see with a perspective that we don't have. We can also ask ourselves questions like, "What do I enjoy doing? What am I passionate about? What lights my fire? What would I do even if nobody paid me? I would definitely read books." And to get paid to read books, that's just a bonus. Another question to ask ourselves is, "What seems easy to me? What things have I done and someone has come up to me and said, 'I could never do that,' or 'How do you you do that? Our own talents often do not seem special to us. We tend to think everybody can do what we can do, but that's not true. Another question to ask is to look at our circumstances. When Annie was born, my husband likes to say, God made his calling to us plain. He wanted us to work with families of handicapped children. We have some friends whose son joined the military. I'm going to cry again. We have some friends whose son joined the military after 9/11. He was in the reserves, and he was in seminary and was called up, and he was killed in Iraq. His mother, Vicky, was thrust into the public eye and into a new calling. This past November, she was elected to the Vermont State Legislature. I'm sure Vicky would never have thought of running for public office if her son had come back from Iraq alive. In March, the Iraqi ambassador went to the Vermont legislature and spoke to them, and he and Vicky met. The picture of their embrace was picked up all across the country. And she handed him a book that her husband, who's a pastor, had written about their son and about their faith. So because of her circumstances, her sphere of influence has become international. Isn't that amazing? The circumstances God gives you may not be what you expect, what you would choose, or even feel that you are suited for. But God gives us the graces for the circumstances he puts us in. So whatever circumstances you are in, those are your gifts and graces. We also find our gifts and graces through trial and error, by trying things out over time. That's the approach we took with our girls. We said, try it. See if you like it. See if you're good at it. You know, I've heard a few women say, I don't have any spiritual gifts, or I'm not good at anything. But each of us does have gifts and graces. A number of years ago, when we were in a different church, a woman came to our church with three young children. She was like this scared little bunny rabbit. You know, you couldn't grab her. She was out the door as soon as the service ended. But she needed help because her husband had just left her. She needed a better job. And my husband, who was a deacon, helped her find one. She didn't have a car, so he gave her a ride to work every day. And every day he gave her the Jesse Jackson speech. Literally, he made her say in the car, I am somebody. Because you see, for years, her husband had told her that she was stupid, she was worthless, nobody would hire her. She had nothing to offer, and she had believed it. It took a while, but eventually she realized, hey, I'm not stupid. I'm not worthless. Now Jamie is remarried, and she's a grandmother. And she is building a resume worthy of the woman of Proverbs 31. So not only do you have gifts and graces, but they are necessary to the kingdom. 1 Corinthians 12:7 says that our gifts are given to us for the common good. And verse 22 says that even the weakest parts are indispensable. I realized that one day as I was talking to Annie's former one-to-one aide. She had moved on to another job, but we had remained friends, and she would call and check up on Annie from time to time. And one day I was telling Mary Lou how much she had helped Annie, and she said to me, I'm going to cry again. Oh no, Mary Ruth, she helped me. She gave me confidence to go back into this work. So my little Annie Bear with Down syndrome, had helped somebody else. That was an eye-opener for me, and it was a very unexpected answer to prayer. Karen McDonald, who was here yesterday, she and I pray together for our special needs daughters. And we had been praying that year that our daughters would be useful in God's kingdom. And God had answered that prayer the very day we prayed that prayer for the first time. Mary Lou had called me. You know, Annie has other gifts and graces. She loves animals. She's comfortable around horses. She's been around them all her life. She's been in a handicap riding program since she was 4 years old. She thrives on routine. She likes to do the same thing over and over and over, day after day. So another answer to prayer that year was that God opened up an opportunity for Annie to start vocational training at the Handicap Riding Center. She works there one day a week, cleaning tack, putting bedding down in the stalls, and she does it all without supervision. It's just amazing. Annie loves her work at the barn. Sally Helgeson says that vocation is where our passions meet the world's needs. I hope that the woman of Proverbs 31 has stimulated you to think of where your passions meet the world's needs and ways that you can use your gifts and graces in your home and your family, your church and your community. So I'm not going to give you specific suggestions. I'm leaving that to your discussion time and for each of you as you pray and try out your gifts and graces in the kingdom. I'm sorry I couldn't come up with a better visual for this talk. I thought about this morning, you know, I should have brought a Superman cape or something, but Sally Helgeson says, we are everyday revolutionaries. We are transforming, she says, the American workplace. And the theme of her book is that women are changing the world by their work. I hope you go away this weekend realizing that every one of us is a working woman, whether you get paid to do it or not. And that your workplace every day is nothing less than the kingdom of God. You know, we're going down the mountain, back down the mountain to the real world today. You got it already. I don't even have to say it now. The real world is God's kingdom. It's more real than anything else, and it will last forever. There's one last thing I want to mention about this woman of Proverbs 31. Verse 25 says that she laughs at the time to come. The Hebrew literally there says, at the last day. Elsewhere in the Old Testament, this phrase, the last day, refers to the coming day of the Lord. It's the eschatological day. The woman of Proverbs 31 is not just a cheerful optimist. It's not just that she's got a good retirement account. It's not that she's not afraid of growing old. She is looking forward to the last day, to the day when Jesus will come and hand over the kingdom to the Father, and he will say to us, as we sang this morning, well done. Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. In Proverbs 8, we saw that Jesus and the Father rejoiced in the first days of creation. Ladies, on the last day, we will join them to celebrate